Them phone lines are ringing in Boston. My understanding is the Celtics are getting offers, calls on both Jaylen Brown and Derek White. The Celtics have high price thresholds for both players. We know how great Jaylen Brown and Derek White are. So I'm sure they're getting some massive offers, some pretty big time calls as well. Their preference has been to keep both players, but this is a team that's still in the first apron, still a luxury tax team, still dealing with the uncertainty of Jason Tatum's status next season. So at minimum, I expect Sam Hauser, Anfernee Simons as names that will be discussed. Will a team match that price threshold that the Celtics, I'm told, have set around the league for Jaylen Brown and Derek White to be able to get them? They are listening, but will a team get there? Just in the span of the last 2 days, Scott, though, they've shed $180 million in luxury tax savings. They've gotten out of the second apron, but with a season next year full of uncertainty, just how much do they want to get out of these aprons and the taxes?
I was Shams Charania last night on with Scott Van Pelt discussing the moves the Celtics could make and the moves they don't necessarily want to make. We just talked to Terp, Pure Hoops, Justin Turpin. Check out his work, Justin M. Turpin. Follow him on Twitter there. And also at WEEI. You can hear the full interview on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. Terp says Simons, Niang, each of whom they just got in return for Holiday and Porzingis, respectively, and also Sam Hauser. Any of those guys could be on the move tonight.
Yeah.
Sham says a lot of teams are calling about Jaylen Brown and Derek White. Celtics would need a massive offer, but teams are offering a lot. Windhorse says teams in the top 10 are making offers for Jaylen Brown and Derek White, though he believes ultimately they're going to remain Celtics. Perhaps Windhorse is hearing some of what Brett Siegel of, again, Clutch
Siegel
Points.
Siegel Beagle. Clutch
not,
Points.
Not to move in on Greg Hill Show territory, but caca.
Yeah, a little
with
bit.
With the seagull there.
Oh, it was a seagull.
Stealing little french fries of information.
It happens.
Again, this individual, Brett Siegel, looks young enough to be Terp's kid. But he has a couple of different items. One, that the Jazz are making an aggressive push for Jaylen Brown. They pick at five.
Makes sense. So Danny Ainge would want Jaylen Brown back.
The number five pick for Jaylen Brown.
No,
our guy Josh in New Hampshire is on board with that. Not me.
No, not me either.
Brett,
what about
Siegel?
Lauri Markkanen?
Brett
take him back.
Siegel is also hearing the Raptors offered the number nine pick for Derek White. Any interest there?
There's no interest there, but I think Derek White for a top 10 pick, if you really like the draft. I don't really love the draft that much. I think Cooper Flagg's a stud. There'll be somebody that emerges from that next group. And if Brad Stevens feels really strongly about that, I guess maybe at least like Jaylen Brown for one of those picks, I think you're insulted by it. But like Derek White fetching a pick in there and then whatever else, like that's somewhat intriguing, but I'm also saying no to that. Like, I'm keeping both of these guys. I think the way this offseason...
You and I both said no to a Desmond Bane, Mikal Bridges type of trade Derek White.
Right.
So I don't... assuming it's just the number 10 pick.
Oh, just the number 10 pick.
And not like a raft of picks.
Right.
And even but, so, I get the value on a raft of picks, but I don't want that. I'd rather have Derek White here this year trying to win and then still with Tatum a year from now.
But the issue with, like, the pile of picks is you don't even know where those are always going to be.
Correct.
Whereas like this year, no, but I'm saying if they give you like a top 10 pick this year, you at least know you have a top 10 pick this year. So
at
least, you know, you think about it, but I'm keeping Brown and I'm keeping White. I think it was kind of inevitable that Porzingis and Holiday were going to be traded and probably Hauser. And so two of those three things have already happened. They're still keeping their top two guys as they wait for Tatum to return. So this is kind of what we thought, maybe just a little bit quicker than you and I thought it was going to be. The draft tonight, another opportunity for not only the Celtics, but a lot of teams to make a lot of different moves around the league. But I'm wondering if, like, what are Brad's basketball decisions that he has in store? Like, what right now he's playing like banker and he's like trying to figure out all the finances.
He
and he's, like,
did the best he could with the parameters that ownership set. I think he did really well on the Holiday trade. I think he did really poorly on the Porzingis.
I agree. And but Terp had a good point about how I didn't know if you might have to throw in a pick for somebody to eat those contracts or whatever else. And like you didn't do that. So you still have all your stuff that if you want to maneuver.
Yes and no. I felt that way. I thought they would have to, especially on Holiday, sweeten the pot. I'm shocked they didn't have to give up a draft pick.
if you did give up, call it a future first with Porzingis, could you have gotten more than Niang?
Yeah, maybe.
My guess is yes. So in that scenario, I don't really think he did well not involving the pick. I'd rather get a better return on Porzingis.
But then the tricky part is, if you throw in a pick and you get a good player, what is that player? $20 million?
Right.
And then where are you at? And
so
then,
now
yeah.
So now between the two trades, you probably shaved off $10 million. Yeah. You still got to move out. There are other ways to get below yeah. the luxury tax, though. You didn't have to do it with just these two trades. And again, I'll say it for the 50 billionth time, you didn't have to do it before the draft or before free agency or by opening night. You can do that in season by the trade deadline next year and dip below the luxury tax. None of this had to happen in real time.
So I think the risk you run.
But of course, Bill Chisholm doesn't want to pay any of these guys in the meantime.
No, he doesn't. He's trying to save money. That's clear. Get in line with the other owners in town, apparently. Right? Just like trying to save money.
That's the new hotness.
That is what they're doing.
Don't spend.
You shouldn't make excuses for it. But this is sort of Brad Stevens trying to figure this out. I think the biggest risk you might run to if you just rolled this team out is if Drew Holiday looked like he did a few years ago. If Kristaps Porzingis was healthy and the Eastern Conference is wide open, it's like, hey, guys, we got to keep this team together now. We still don't have Tatum. We're not even relying on Tatum. Although there'd be plenty of talks like, actually, he's actually ahead of schedule. And then they'd be like, now you'd be crazy.
Now you're trapped.
If you trade them when you're like the number one or two seed, people would revolt. Whereas you do it now, after a real downer, you lose in the second round, Tatum's already out, everybody's already talking about it. This is the easier way to do it.
No, that's true. But I guess my argument is, let's say you got a Simons-like return for Porzingis. Or maybe, I think you're a little worse this year without Holiday with Simons. I like Simons, but I do think Holiday probably helps you win more than Simons. But we'll see how all that plays out, if they even keep him. But if you got another deal like that, or maybe you got a little worse from Porzingis, but you save some money and it's a younger player who you can debate whether or not you want to trade. Well, now you have Simons and whoever that player is, and you could flip them at the deadline. There's a lot of options that you have. I don't like the return for Porzingis, even understanding the apron implications and all of this, which I mostly think are bullcrap. I'll disagree with Terp on that. I don't think those second apron restrictions are significant. I don't. I never have, and I don't. But they're not done. They have more moves they could make, and the Bulpet report, Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald, or formerly of the Boston Herald, now at Heavy.com, reported the Celtics are trying to move up into the lottery to get Kasperis Jakachonis, if I'm saying that anywhere near right.
Good pull.
Out of Illinois. So I do think that would be very interesting to evaluate and see how it goes. You know, I don't know that Brad Stevens can draft. Never mind target a guy and move up and draft. We have no idea. I mean, I'm not saying he can't. I'm not telling you he can't. But we really don't know. That would be an interesting test case. If Brad said, I like this guy, I'm going to go get him, I'm going to move whatever it takes, future picks, future assets, Hauser, Simons, Niang, whatever, I'm going to move up because I think this is a really good player. I think he's going too late. I think he's a guy that we can grow with and would fit well with Tatum. I'm going to go get him. And that would be interesting. I don't need them to do that tonight. I'm not asking for them to do it tonight, but that would be an interesting thing to follow because Brad hasn't stuck his neck out there at all when it comes to the draft, at all.
Jakacionis, according to The Ringer, a high-feel orchestrator and playmaker who will add rhythm and flow to whatever offense he joins. 13.5 points per game last year at Illinois as a freshman. Over 6 assists, which is a big number in college. 32.7% from 3. Although the Celtics have a history of taking guys under Danny Ainge that didn't shoot great in college and ended up, some of them, being much better than the pros, others kind of staying the same, but that usually doesn't scare him away.
So,
and that's not a terrible number.
No, but I'm just saying, like if Brad,
that's going out there and like identifying a guy, moving way up in the draft.
Moving from 28 to the lottery?
Oh, that's big. I mean, last year they just waited. We thought they were going to trade out of the first round and they didn't. And then it was the old stick and pick, Baylor Shireman. You're like, okay. Saw him a little bit in blowouts and that kind of thing.
If I had to guess, and this is no disrespect to Bulpet, who I think is very plugged in. If I had to guess, they're moving the other way. They're not moving up. They're moving out of the first round for more.
Yeah, and I'm sure he
for
heard
more savings.
And they might like this guy.
I bet they
but
do.
Like, what if he goes 7 overall? He'd be like, yeah, we liked him, but long gone.
Right.
7.
Yeah. So keep an eye on it. If he ends up having a good career, like, hey, Brad liked him. It's like, okay, great. Couldn't get him, but he liked him.
Yeah, I would like a little bit of a track record of Brad drafting though, because really there isn't one to this point. That's not his fault. You know. Juwan Begarin out of France, JD Davidson, if you count G League stats, pretty good player.
G League player of the year.
Last year it was Shireman and Anton Watson.
Yeah, no, it's been kind of an incomplete. You can't say he's bad at drafting, but you certainly can't say he's good at it.
But you don't know.
Nobody can.
It's a literal incomplete. Yeah. You don't know. And I guess, you know, looking at the returns so far, I would question it. So we'll see how much he sticks his neck out there. My guess is, if anything, they move back because they don't want to guarantee money. 617-779-7937. That's your phone number to jump in line. Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We'll get back to the Red Sox coming up at 1 o'clock. We got Grab Bag and Clip du Jour for you. And on the way next, Mike Giardi threw out an interesting possible solution for the Patriots wide receiver room. It's a name you've heard before, Keefe. It's a name I know you like. Mm. Let's get to it next.
If the Patriots are an 8-9, 9-8 football team and are picking somewhere between 16th and 21 or 22,
they talk themselves into,
hey, we'll give up the 18th pick for AJ Brown and think you can get like two or three really elite years because him, Vrabel, the whole thing. That's a conversation that, well, I'm sure. Look, I know at some point during the year he's going to do something that we're going to have to talk about and say, like, are they at a breaking point with him? Because that's just generally that's that position.
Mike Giardi keeping the AJ Brown dream alive, Keith.
Okay,
not this offseason.
Oh,
but
at some point down the road,
if they have a competitive year, and we think they will. I got him for 9. Him for 10. No adjustments there, right?
Not yet. Nope. I'm locked in there still at 10.
He was even lower than that. He's like, they win 7 or 8 games. They're just a competitive team.
Okay.
At some point, he's going to do something that pisses the Eagles off, and all Mike Vrabel's going to come calling.
I believe that could happen.
So it's a long-term dream of A.J. Brown that he's fanning the flames on. I just think it's more of the same, where the Patriots are desperately trying to find receivers, whether it was early on in free agency, Chris Godwin, where they were calling around on some of the receivers that got traded, whether it was even up to this offseason before Rashad Bateman signed his extension with the Ravens, they were calling about him. They're in on A.J. Brown. They know their receiver room is nowhere good enough, and I guess it's commendable they're trying to make moves, but when are they going to pull the trigger on that as opposed to, you know, bargain shopping for Steph Diggs coming off a busted ACL?
I know. It is. It is an age coming off ACL Steph Diggs, and that's still the best wide receiver acquisition they've had in several years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like A.J. Brown was kind of the dream, especially with the Mike Vrabel connection, but just the way the whole thing unfolded and, you know, Philly winning the Super Bowl, it seems like that has sort of put that to bed. I mean, if they get him in another year or two, like, all right, good. Like, I guess, like, Drake May's going to need somebody, and we're assuming it's still Drake May, so that's fine.
And if you want to be on the Josh Allen timeline, Allen got Diggs,
year
a different vintage of
two,
Diggs.
No, three.
Year three.
Yeah,
and
year
so
three.
You would be on that timeline.
So if it's that, then so be it. I mean, they really, really need somebody like Kyle Williams to hit. Like, eventually they need a guy like that that you sort of grow with, and then you have that player, then you make the decision to hopefully commit to him, and then rather than like the Titans trading away an AJ Brown, you just re-sign him and you keep that player.
I asked you this yesterday, but audiences change all the time. Keith,
all
radio.
The time.
Would you wager on Kyle Williams hitting as a Patriots draft?
I wouldn't. Okay. I would not bet on that. Right. I would not bet on that, even with free money.
I'm not ruling it out, but no. I'm not even popping down a bonus bet on that.
But of all the young receivers that they have on the team, meaning everybody outside of Diggs, Bourne, and Hollins, I would say he has the best chance to be good. And I only say that because he's the only one I haven't seen.
Fair.
Don't you think? Like, if you were like, who's going to have the best NFL career?
Jalen Polk and Javon Baker.
Polk,
and guys
Baker,
like that.
Even Booty and Douglas.
Yeah,
I'd be like, all right, I think I kind of know what they are or could be. Like Williams, I don't really know. So I'll pick him out of the bunch.
Speaking of bets.
Mookie?
Nope.
Oh.
No, if you want to Mount Rushmore your bets, we can do that coming up. Bet Online came out with all these various odds for the elimination stage for each NFL team.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, the Patriots to win the Super Bowl plus 6,600.
Cha-ching!
Buying opportunity?
Sucker's bet.
Okay.
Probably sucker's bet.
To lose in the Super Bowl plus 6,000.
What? How about that being your bet? I'm betting on them to lose the Super Bowl.
But they're not going
to
win.
They're going to make it. They're going to get all the way there, but for an extra plus 600, no. So then you're like rooting like hell for them to lose the Super Bowl?
Yeah, they're
not. That's a
fun bet. They're going to get rocked like they did against the Bears, but that's the precise scenario I'm wagering on. Losing the conference championship plus 1,800.
Okay.
Losing the divisional round plus 700. Losing the wild card plus 300.
Hmm? That seems like a buying opportunity.
Here's the headline, though, I think. To miss the postseason, it is heavy juice, minus 175, that they will miss the playoffs and not make it all together.
Which is odd because
they're favored in a bunch of games.
Right.
The over-under is 8.5. Last I checked.
They're favored in 11 games, but clearly the odds makers say, all right, setting the win totals, they got them right at 8.5. And I guess 9 is not a guarantee of making the playoffs, so that's why they probably have to weigh it.
Cincinnati a year ago, So that's fair.
But if they get to 9, it's going to come down to probably tiebreaker. I feel like 10 you're in. Right, it's those very strange years where you win 10 and don't make it. 9, it probably comes down to a tiebreaker of some sort. So to put them at minus 175 to miss the playoffs, I feel like that's a terrible bet. There's no juice, and I think they make it.
Yeah, plus 300 might be something, though.
Yeah, plus 300 losing the wild card round, like again, in 21.
For Bet Online, we're saying don't bet plus 6,000 they're going to get to the Super Bowl and lose it.
What's the fun in that?
Don't do that.
No, that's a terrible bet.
Meanwhile, the other thing that came out today, and I listened to this morning, I didn't think there was much there, but it has picked up a little steam on social media.
The guy about the greasy pole? You talking about that?
No.
Oh, no. That picked up some steam this morning. Guy called in with Greg and was like, knock it off.
Hey,
Shime's not going to be on
not
there.
Not having it. Which, by the way, if I were Shime, I'd be like, thank God I don't
You're
have
like,
to go
phew.
On. Thank God I don't have to run on that.
That is a reckless injury waiting to happen.
Perhaps break something and worst case scenario, kill myself. That's a good thing to avoid, by Shime. Kraft was on the Schefter podcast. It came out this morning. They recorded it at the Fanatics Fan Fest.
Oh, my God. That's that thing.
Because if it came out today, Kraft may have to answer for his fellow owners and them all colluding against players and not wanting to guarantee them contracts. No, this came out at Fan Fest where they did the interview in front of a live audience. Kraft, to me, sounded every bit his age when I listened to this.
All right.
Schefter also made a big point of making sure that everyone knew that Kraft wanted to refer to him as RKK. He wasn't being disrespectful by calling him RKK in the interview.
I know him that way where I can do that. I can call him by
his
initials.
He wanted to make sure that Kraft demanded he was called RKK in the interview.
All right.
But there are two things that jumped out. One, I feel like I've heard Robert say before, these last 2 years were the worst of his ownership tenure, which I feel like I've heard that.
Also, just look at the record. Kind of could assume that it was.
Just math,
it's
really, is
pretty
all that
much
is.
The worst two-season stretch that you've had. So
correct.
That makes sense.
You gotta call me RKK. Hey. Okay.
Yeah, that's what. That's what you have to do. I will not answer to anything else.
All right.
But the most interesting thing I thought, and I did see Reese quote tweet this, is he was asked about the Lakers sale for $10 billion. He went into a big story about how he knew Jerry Buss and he thinks Jeannie Buss is doing a great job and blah, blah, blah. He did say he thinks that not only will Patriots ownership go through his lifetime, but last through his children as well. So it doesn't sound like he is in this boat where we were surmising maybe John Henry was, or clearly Irv Grosbeck was. Who knows with Jeremy Jacobs. He's not at a point where he's looking at those numbers ticking up, 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 up and going, whoa, $10 billion. Maybe we'll sell this
Let's
thing.
Do that. No, I think he loves it.
They'll sell percentages of the team. They'll sell 5%, 10% chunks, maybe to Sovereign Wealth, for all I know. But they're not going to sell the full stake in the team.
Kind of what I think we all were led to believe. And, you know, everybody will say that Jonathan's already doing so much and has been doing so much for many years that I don't think they're all of a sudden just going to remove it from the family. I think it's going to stay there for a while. Also, the way things are going, I'd probably rather own... It's kind of obvious. An NFL team over any of these other leagues.
Yeah.
Based on sort of like the money structure and everything else.
I'll tell you, a buddy of mine in finance, Bragg.
Oh.
Showed me a tweet the other week.
Oh, I thought he was going to say he showed me some graphs.
No.
Charts.
Jerry Buss, if he would have just if he would have just invested whatever he put into the Lakers. I forgot what he purchased the Lakers for in 1979. If he would have just put that money on the S&P 500, he would have made way more money on that than owning a professional sports franchise.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
how... You got to get it in for the love of the game,
I don't know if that's how it works for, you know, a professional football franchise. Like, those make money hand over fist versus an NBA team. But that would have been a good way to make a little more money than investing in the
Lakers.
There
you go.
617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get back to the Red Sox coming up. Another wasted start for Garrett Crochet. Maybe a contract extension in the works for Alex Bregman, or maybe he'll opt out. Who knows? Plus another terrible loss last night. We'll get to it next.